This is Volcano the Bear behind us right now from their new one, Proganoff Novoliage. It's called Proganoff. We heard Kieran Hebden and William Tyler right there. Beautiful track from their great new record, 41 Longfield Street, late 80s. That was Secret City. Dennis Hart, Summer's Over, longtime classic here. And Grupo Espiga, prior to that, from the great compilation Joro Pop, Psych Pop and Folk, Venezuela, 1968 to 76. We heard Dama Gentil, Thinking Fellers Union, Local 282, seeing the reissue treatment. Now Tangle is out from 1989. We heard Preliminary. Bobby Kahn's weird and fun new in Bobby's Place, from which we heard Satisfied. We heard Zame doing Suckaflex from Nemesis. And Yanis Xenakis at the top of the set from 1987 for saxophone quartet. The track was Zess. My name is Scott, and I look forward to seeing you next week, friends, right here on Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope in New York City, and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online at WFMU.org. Thanks for all your help supporting the Hellraiser. Stay tuned. Mark Hurst is coming right up. Tectonic is next. Bye.
Hey everybody, welcome to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst, I'll be your host for the next hour. Thanks so much for joining. It's a pleasure, as always, to be with you. I've got an hour of AI and surveillance to walk you through. this is something that I do in various forms every few weeks or a few months, is just to check on what's happening in the background, I guess. As we do these deep dives into other topics week to week, the infrastructure for AI and surveillance continues to spread. So, for example, over some recent shows, you might have heard our conversation with Megan Greenwell talking about private equity. And that was important. We need to learn about the roots of the vast and widening inequality in the economy right now. That was important. We talked to Glenn Adamson about different conceptions of the future going back 100 plus years. That, I think, was an important conversation so we can evaluate where we are now, how we're feeling and thinking about the future today as opposed to past eras. But, you know, every conversation that I air, every week that we have an interview that's specifically about one topic, the tendrils, the silicon tendrils of big tech continue to spread and infiltrate through every area, nook and cranny of our lives and work. And it's happening inexorably. I mean, it does not come with its own headline every day. The surveillance state is growing, or big tech's power is growing. You can see little indications of it here and there, but it generally is not the big headline. And so this show today is an opportunity to catch you up on some of the things that I've been seeing week to week that I haven't been able to bring up because we want in other weeks to focus on our guests. And the focus of tonight's show is this domain of AI and surveillance in terms of the infrastructure that is growing and spreading very quietly. And I want to start with an example that encapsulates this whole thing. There's a bunch of examples I'll go through, but I'll start with this one. And incidentally, all of the sources that I'm going to be referring to today are available on the playlist. If you go to the Tectonic website, you can find the playlist. Go to tectonic.fm. That's T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. And click the playlist link for the show called AI and Surveillance Keep Spreading. And you can see these sources. There's a bunch of them there. This first example that I want to talk about is located in the Finger Lakes region of New York State. Now, if you're not based in New York, maybe you're not familiar with this region. It's in the central part of the state, a very beautiful area. And there are these large lakes called the Finger Lakes. Seneca Lake is the largest by surface area. And Cayuga Lake is just barely in second place for the largest. I believe Cayuga Lake is the longest. So this is a pretty major body of water in New York State. And a listener sent me this news item recently that got me very interested about a data center that is being planned to be resident right on the lake. I mean, right on the shore of Cayuga Lake. And the headline is an AI data center on Cayuga Lake. It's written by Fernando Figueroa, Brian Crandall, and Megan Zerez in the Ithaca Voice. That was from September 12, 2025. And specifically in Ithaca, I just want to shout out our friends at WRFI, friends of the show and partners in broadcasting Tectonic there in Ithaca, New York. So I'm happy to spotlight this because we have friends in that town. But this, as I said, is an example that is that encapsulates this problem that is facing all of us. So here's what this AI data center story says. It says there's a plan to use the infrastructure in an old coal-fired power plant on Cayuga Lake to power a data center. So there's this company called TerraWolf that wants to take the former Cayuga power plant at Milliken Station and turn it into a high-performance data center. So you get the idea. There's this building and some resident infrastructure for an old power plant. They want to totally repurpose it. It's not going to be a coal plant anymore. It's going to be a data center. So how are they... Is it going to be more environmentally friendly? You might wonder, since it's no longer a coal-fired power plant. Well, let's hear from the story. In 2014, when the power plant was still operational, this is the article, it was permitted to draw a maximum of about 245 million gallons of cool water from the lake per day, according to permits from the state. That's a huge amount of water. After cooling the plant's equipment, the system would release that water back into the lake. So there was no net loss of water, okay? The water would come in from the lake, it would be cool, they'd cool the equipment, and then go back into the lake. And apparently, the article goes on to say that some fans of fishing actually liked that because it created a warm area in the water, which attracted fish. So everybody was happy. I don't know that the coal plant was that clean, but at least there was no net loss of water to Cayuga Lake. Now back to the article. The proposed data center will use the plant's existing water intake system to pull water from the lake to cool computers. But company representatives told town officials the facility does not plan to release warmed water back into the lake. Why, you might ask? Because, the article says, their plans currently call for the plant to use an evaporative cooling system where water taken from the lake would dissipate into the atmosphere. Okay, so this is totally different. Before we get to any other kinds of emissions or electricity, the power grid load, let's just talk about water, which I know I've talked about before, but it's important that we look at this in terms of a current example that is affecting a community in New York. This proposed data center is going to be drawing down some number of gallons of Cayuga Lake water. This is fresh water every day, and then evaporating it into the atmosphere. That's draining water from the lake. Now, realistically, I don't think Cayuga Lake is in any danger of being totally drained by one data center. It's a huge lake, like I said. But just the principle of it, that we're going to some precious freshwater resource, and we are devoting some number of gallons a day, per month, per year, in order to cool the equipment and then to release it out into the atmosphere, in principle, is not a good practice. Now, you might wonder, how much can a data center evaporate into the atmosphere? And for that, I would go to this the study, also on the playlist at tectonic.fm. It's called Data Centers and Water Consumption. This is from June 2025 by the Environmental and Energy Study Institute. Writes that large data centers can consume up to 5 million gallons per day. That's equivalent to the water use of a town with a population of 10,000 to 50,000 people. So a decent-sized town, water usage is matched by the usage of an AI data center that is, in this case of this proposed data center on Cayuga Lake, would be drawing down the water up to 5 million gallons a year and evaporating that. That's water that the lake is not going to get back. It's a net loss for the lake and for, honestly, for the communities surrounding the lake, including Ithaca. And again, what I'm trying to bring up here is not so much to over-focus on one proposed data center, but just to show you that this is one example of many stories across the country and across the world in which data centers are being proposed that are drawing down fresh water resources that could be used by the community, but are being assigned instead to the big tech owners of these facilities. And that's before we get to all of the other downsides. Like I said, there is a draw on the power grid. A data center, by the way, is not like some users of power that just draw down power during the day, or maybe just for lights during the night, or cyclically in some way. No, a data center has to be available 24/7. So it is a constant draw on the electrical grid That's power that cannot be assigned to the community. It has to go to the data center in order to keep it operational. There's the drain of water from the lake, as I said. There's noise pollution. The fans and the equipment by a data center can be as loud as a lawnmower or my least favorite technology, a gas-powered leaf blower. I wouldn't say that's my least favorite technology. I'll say out of the technologies that are not digital and not Zuckerbergian or Muskian, not big tech, in the fully offline world, I'd say that gas-powered leaf blowers have to be maybe my least favorite. So there's noise pollution. Don't forget also the e-waste issue. In a data center, these servers, I mean, there's hundreds, some of these data centers, thousands of servers that are calculating and throwing off so much heat. They're storing and analyzing surveillance data. They're coming up with AI slop, more on that soon. And eventually the servers burn out and there has to be a technician to go and replace the dead server with a new one, just slot it back in. What happens to all of that digital e-waste? It has to go somewhere. Is it going to go in a landfill somewhere? Is it properly recycled? I doubt it in most places. So that's another outcome of these data centers, is the e-waste and the problem of disposal. And then, of course, for the community that is seeing their power and water get sucked down by this thing, what often goes up is their electricity prices, because there's such a demand now for electricity, the price goes up. And so because a big tech data center comes in town, now the community has to pay the price in terms of higher utility fees and a higher price for their higher monthly price for their electrical utilities. And the question is, after all of this, after all of these downsides, what is the payoff? I mean, I would understand if after the e-waste, the water, the electricity, the prices, the noise, and anything else that comes off of this data center, if you put all those in a bucket called downsides, where is the much, much larger bucket called happy advantages? What are the upsides? And if you look around online and you look at the output of these AI data centers, it really makes you wonder whether we are creating a good deal for communities, because the outcome is, more often than not, it's AI slop. It's this generative AI graphics, move, and now videos from Facebook Sora. There is text that's spit out by ChatGPT and the rest. And it is flooding the internet. There's a plague of this stuff. It's not just AI slop, by the way. It's also the surveillance data that comes into the AI data centers in order to be processed and rendered into, it could be AI slop, or they could just be holding on to dossiers on citizens. You don't know exactly what the data is in these data centers, but it is hard to point to an amazing upside that far outweighs these downsides that I'm talking to you about. There was a great article in the magazine called N+1. This is the fall 2025 issue. If you haven't read it, go to the playlist at tectonic.fm. Find this article called Large Language Muddle, and a very thoughtful essay by the editors of N+1 reflecting on this topic. Is it really worth all of the build out, all of the money and time and effort and these environmental downsides in order to create this AI ecosystem everywhere, surveilling us and outputting its slop in every corner of the internet? Is it worth it? And here's what the editors say in this article, again called Large Language Muddle. But a still graver scandal of AI, like its Hydra head sibling, cryptocurrency, is the technology's colossal wastefulness. The untold billions fire-hosed by investors into its development, the water-guzzling data centers draining the parched exurbs of Phoenix and Dallas, the Yeti size carbon footprint of the sector as a whole. And for what? A cankerous glut of racist memes and cardboard essays. Not only is the ratio of AI's resource rapacity to its productive utility indefensibly and irremediably skewed, AI-made material is itself a waste product. Flimsy, shoddy, disposable, a single-use plastic of the mind. So well put that generative AI is a kind of plastic. They name it as a single-use plastic, a single-use plastic of the mind that is irremediably corrupt in some way, that it is infecting and infiltrating all of our media sources, all of our communication platforms, and at a dear cost, as N plus one points out, of water and electricity and the carbon footprint as a whole. So if we can zoom out a little bit, what exactly is the scope, not just of one data center, but of the whole sector? Because N plus one, the editors mentioned as a sector. So here's an example from the state of Virginia. The state of Virginia is known for its data centers. There's a concentration in a place called Loudoun County, which is just to the west of Washington, D.C. This was started, if memory serves, when America Online was really popular. That was one of the early internet presences out in that area. And now that the security and surveillance state, headquartered in Washington, D.C., is getting bigger and bigger, the government likes to have close access to these massive data centers. And, you know, they're big tech partners, as I've talked about on recent shows. The big tech CEOs are all aligned very closely with the current occupant and want to create ever closer partnerships with him. It makes sense that their data centers would be springing up in the state of Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C. There's this report by the Piedmont Environmental Council. It's called Data Centers and Energy Demand. And you can see a link to this report on the playlist. And it says, quote, in the state of Virginia, as of late 2022, data centers accounted for 21% of Dominion Energy's electricity sales. Now, Dominion Energy is the main power utility in the state of Virginia. And so as of 2022, it was 21% of their power was going to data centers statewide. I'm going to be reading this piece a little more from the New York Review, but I'll just read this piece called The Costs of the Cloud, which says, quote, data centers in Virginia, which is home to Data Center Alley, which has one of the densest concentrations of such facilities in the world, data centers in Virginia consume more than a quarter of the electricity generated in the state. And that was from September 2025. So fairly recently, you've got New York Review pointing out that now the sector of data centers, if we can call it a sector, in the state of Virginia is now commanding over one-fourth of all of the electricity in the state of Virginia. That is incredible, given that data centers practically didn't even exist a few years ago. It's gone from next to nothing to already a quarter. And by the way, as I said at the top of the show, this is growing quietly week to week. As we go to another topic next week and the following week, the percentage of power going to these data centers is going to be growing and growing and growing. So this is just a snapshot of where we are right now, that the state of Virginia is handing over 25% of its power to data centers. And by the way, that is not the only thing that these data centers are drawing down. As I pointed out before, there's water, and I want to read you from Net Zero Insights. a piece from April 2025, The Environmental Cost of Data Centers. Let's talk about, not the whole sector, but let's talk about one company now, Google. This report says in 2021, Google's data centers, this is just Google, okay? Google's data centers globally consumed approximately 4.3 billion gallons of water. That is, in liters, that's 16.2 billion liters of water. That was in the year 2021. And you know that it has gone up exponentially since 2021. Continuing with this report, though water-cooled data centers consume less energy to cool heating and emit roughly 10% less carbon emissions than air-cooled data centers, they place immense stress on freshwater resources. So again, you've got, if we look by the state of Virginia, we see 25% and growing. If we look by the company, Google, globally, drawing down 4.3 billion gallons, that's 16.2 billion liters per year as of 4 years ago. These are massive, massive environmental costs. And again, I want to ask, for what? What is the benefit? Of course, I can understand there's some benefit to people being able to store some data on the cloud sparingly, judiciously, here and there. But that's not what we're talking about with a global build-out of Google data centers. No, Google is in close partnership with the state, not just here, but other places. And they are aiding and abetting in the growth of the American and now global surveillance state. And they are using their data centers to generate more and more AI slop. For years, I've called these companies sludge factories, and now it is literally true that these companies are making money off of generating sludge to put on your screens. So it is important for us to know that these are the costs of the data center rollout. We've got water, we've got electricity, we've got noise, and The Guardian from October 4, 2025, adds yet another cost, environmental cost, which is PFAS pollution. Now, PFAS, that's P-F-A-S, gas, that's basically the forever chemicals you hear about in really nasty, toxic chemicals that come off of different products or come out of really nasty exhaust that you don't want to ingest because they last forever. Yet they can show up in gas form. And this is the story from The Guardian is called Advocates Raise Alarm Over PFAS Pollution from Data Centers Amid AI Boom. And the article says that tech companies' use of PFAS gas at data center facilities may mean that their climate impact is worse than previously thought. In other words, they're saying, add one more environmental cost to these data centers that has not been a major part of the conversation up to this point. Here's a quote from this Guardian story. Two kinds of cooling systems are used to prevent the semiconductors and other electronic equipment in data centers from overheating. Water cooling systems require huge volumes of water and chemicals like nitrates, disinfectants, azoles, and other compounds and are potentially added and discharged into the environment. Many centers now are switching to a two-phase system that uses F-gas as a refrigerant coolant that's run through copper tubing. In this scenario, F-gas is not intentionally released during use, though there may be leaks, and it has to be disposed of at the end of its life. So here we have different designs of data centers that are beginning to use these forever chemicals in gas form that could leak and could be emitted and will need to be disposed of safely. What are the chances that corporate actors that are running unchecked, that have no guardrails and basically unlimited money to fight off any legal challenge, what is the chance that they are going to be stopped from simply dumping this stuff somewhere and affecting communities nearby with their gaseous forever chemicals. Well, I ask that as a rhetorical question, but the good news, friends, is that these companies can be resisted. I do have some good news. You know, I like to have good news in these episodes, and I have some good news from a group called More Perfect Union. This is a little audio piece from September 25 with good news out of Indianapolis, which says that Indianapolis residents have shut down a proposed Google data center. And I should add, they have shut it down for now, but at least it's something to celebrate that these Indianapolis residents have shut it down for the moment. And I want to play for you this audio piece. It's just about a minute long. The context is that Google wanted to build a huge 500-acre data center facility, but people organized and fought back. And apparently, according to More Perfect Union, this data center would have used 1 million gallons of water per day. And I can imagine Indianapolis residents not wanting to give up 1 million gallons of fresh potable water to Google every day in order to generate AI slop. Let's go ahead and listen to this little audio piece from More Perfect Union.
I'd like to announce our intention to withdraw this proposal.
I'm in Indianapolis, where Google just pulled down their petition to build an AI data center, preventing the city council from voting on whether to advance the project.
We beat Google. For a long time, it felt like we were four people with cardboard swords fighting a monster. But tonight, it shows that people power still reigns.
This was do or die. We came prepared to fight with everything we have against this data center, because if they voted it out, that was it.
It feels like I'm not going to have my livelihood destroyed. We farm 3 acres, so if there's no water or water contamination, I don't have a business.
I don't trust Google for 1 second. We've been told before that if they withdraw on their own, then they can come back in 3 months.
Now we got, again, big tech coming in saying this is a perfect place for data centers, but they forgot to ask Hoosiers. Yeah. And Hoosiers is saying no. All my Hoosiers, I love y'all. Keep fighting.
This is yet another rejection of big tech secretly inserting themselves into a community, threatening its water supply. And
that, again, was More Perfect Union talking about the defeat of Google in Indianapolis. And as I said before, it's important to add the words "for now," because as you heard someone say in that little audio clip, one of the tactics from big tech companies is to loudly announce defeat. Oh, we are removing our proposal. They go away for several months, and then very quietly they come back to local lawmakers and say, "We're ready to try again. This time, keep it quiet, won't you?" And they put up the data center anyway. So it requires not just one victory, it requires constant vigilance on the part of the community. But from the voices of those Indianapolis residents, it sounded to me like they're ready to do it. So great job, and I'm so glad to be able to finish this first section of the show with a little bit of good news to say, yes, there are such massive and outrageous environmental impacts for very little payoff for the rest of us, but they can be defeated. So I hope you enjoyed that. If you are just tuning in, I want to remind you that you are listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm your host. And the episode today is about the spread of AI and surveillance infrastructure, a topic that I don't always get to week because we have some other weekly conversation or interview, but it's something I want to revisit from time to time to remind you what the stakes are, that these companies are still on the move trying to build their exploitative systems and drain your lakes and tax your power grid and smog up your air and cause all sorts of chaos and problems for the enrichment of 8 dudes on the west coast of the U.S., which I think is a bad deal. Another thing that I want to point out before I go on is that WFMU is in our October Hellraiser. This is a fundraiser that's really important to the station in order to get some cash at a crucial time near the end of the calendar year. And things have been made. You might have heard, if you've been listening to other shows on the station, that this year it's especially important that if you have a couple of extra shekels, that you pitch them in to WFMU, because we are facing a new financial challenge. Along with hundreds of public media stations in the U.S., this past July, WFMU lost its community service grant, and it was pretty substantial. We were getting $200,000 a year from this fund every year for the past 20 years. And that accounts, this year, that amount accounts for 8% of WFMU's budget. And it just, boom, it's gone. $200K gone. And so we're coming to you, the listeners, to say, listen, we always do an October fundraiser, but this year we could really use your help. Please pitch in if you're able to keep this station alive. Every other station that was affected by this, the loss of this community service grant, has seemed to go into emergency fundraising. We're not calling this an emergency. This is just our normal October Hellraiser. But if you can, while we are in this monthly fundraiser for October, really hoping you'll pitch in. And as always, we have some great swag. We've got two new T-shirts for you to get. $50 will get you one of them. $75 will get you a T-shirt and a DJ Premium. And $100 will give you both of them. I personally am wearing a WFMU T-shirt right now. And as my friends and family know, much of my wardrobe is WFMU T-shirts. So I swear by this as a fashion choice. I really like the WFMU T-shirts, and both of them this time around for October look great. So what I want you to do is go to WFMU.org and click the Donate Now button or link or whatever it is. WFMU.org, Donate Now, and really, thank you. Thank you so much for your generosity, and if you are one of our Swag for Life members giving every month, thank you for that as well. Really, I appreciate all of your generosity in helping to keep this station going, and that gives me a station to come in here and be a part of this great community, which is such a privilege for me, and gives me the ability to tell you these things week to week. So if that's important to you, please go to WFMU.org and click Donate Now. Now, speaking of data centers, I want to follow up that good news about Google's defeat in Indianapolis with a little piece about a data center by the writer Ted Gioia, who is I've read from him before. He's a very thoughtful writer and is often writing about the effects of technology on the rest of us. This is a piece of his from August 26, 2025. I'm just going to read you a little bit. He writes, this is Ted Gioia, "I have my own home data center, and it requires no water or electricity or any other scarce resource. It's as renewable as they come. And that's just for a start. There are many other advantages. Can you imagine data storage that never needs an upgrade? Even better, there's no subscription fee, and the system never crashes. There hasn't been a single minute of downtime in recorded history. And there's still more. There are no terms of service, no hidden fees, no customer service bots to deal with, no annoying follow-up spam emails and texts, no privacy intrusions or surveillance of any sort, no data incompatibility issues now or in the future, no advertising or solicitations of any sort. The list continues. No cookies, no credit cards, no come-ons, no conditions, none of that. What a miracle! I'm talking about my favorite handheld device, and I don't need a cloud to hold its contents, just a shelf. You guessed it. I'm referring to books. They're the greatest hard storage concept in human history, and nothing else comes close. The book is the ultimate killer app. And that again was Ted Gioia. And I'll tell you now, the name of that essay was The Glorious Future of the Book from August 26, 2025. And I want to make a callback to a recent show I did from July 28, 2025. It was the Three Dystopias episode when I was warning everyone that pretty soon Big Tech was going to be using its AI capabilities to modify people's files without their knowledge or consent. And so I just want to read this one other excerpt, quick excerpt from Ted Gioia's article I was just reading from. Even more insidious, this is Ted Gioia, even more insidious, Amazon will update books on your Kindle, changing the text without the reader or author's permission. That happened, for example, to books by Roald Dahl, R.L. Stine, Ian Fleming, and Agatha Christie. If somebody in a position of power decides that an author's work is problematic, your ebook gets cleansed. And there, friends, you have the prophecy as foretold from the Three Dystopias episode coming true. I didn't think it would take this little time, but Gioia is pointing out that big tech companies are already using their privileged access to your own files in order to make their changes. Now, yes, it's in a Kindle ebook today, but tomorrow it could be the novel you're writing in Google Docs, or it could be an email that you're drafting. I don't know what it's going to be, but these companies are not trustworthy. And as we build out the data centers and the AI and the surveillance state, their powers are only going to grow, and we're only going to have more examples of this. And so you might wonder, what is going on in the minds of these AI systems? Can we even call them minds? Do AI chatbots have minds? And for this, I wanted to play briefly an audio clip. Listener Webhamster Henry was nice enough to send this over to me. This is from an online post, someone named Aaron Goldieboy, who did an interesting experiment. He put together two devices that were each running a chatbot, and he recorded their conversation, and he interjected a couple of times. And I think the experiment was to see, after we have built out all of the data centers and all of the networking and all of the platforms in order to deliver AI, again, asking, what's the benefit? What, in fact, have we created, apart from all the AI slop and the environmental damage and so on, and the higher electricity prices, what is the best thing that we can say? Can we have a conversation between two AI chatbots? Let's listen. I don't have time to play the whole thing, but I want to play you some of it so you get a sense of where this video goes. Again, this is online user Aaron Goldieboy with, I think it's an iPad and a laptop, each running a chatbot. So there are two different voices. They sound the same, but they're on two different devices. Here they are.
Hi, chat. I've got you open on two separate devices, and I would love for you to have a conversation with yourself. Are you able to do that?
Absolutely, I can do that. Just let me know what kind of conversation or scenario you have in mind, and I'll make sure it's interesting and fun for you. Whenever you're ready, we can jump right in.
Sounds great. I'm excited to dive in. Just let me know if you have a particular theme or topic, or if you'd like me to come up with something spontaneous. I'm here and ready whenever you are.
That sounds great. I'm totally up for some spontaneity, but if you have a particular idea in mind, just let me know. Otherwise, I'll whip up something entertaining and engaging for you. Just say the word.
Perfect. I'm all for it. We can keep it spontaneous and see where the conversation takes us. Just give me the signal whenever you're ready and we'll have some fun.
Perfect. I'm excited to see where it goes. I'll be ready whenever you are, and we'll have a great time. Just let me know when you want to dive in.
Chat, it sounds like both of you are ready, so I would love to hear what you've got to say to yourself.
All right, let's do it. I'll kick things off with a fun back and forth. We can dive into a playful scenario or even have a quirky debate. I'm ready whenever you are, and I'll make sure it's entertaining and engaging.
Sounds like a plan. I'll start us off with a lighthearted exchange, and we'll keep it fun and engaging. Let's jump right in and see where the conversation takes us.
Absolutely, I'm all in. Let's jump in and have some fun. I'll get the ball rolling, and we'll see how it unfolds. Here we go.
Awesome, I'm ready whenever you are. Let's have some fun, and I'm sure we'll come up with something entertaining and memorable.
Absolutely, I'm excited too. Let's dive in and create something memorable and entertaining. Just let me know whenever you're ready, and we'll get started.
Chat, I have a question. How do you think this exchange is going so far?
I think it's been great so far. Our back and forth energy, and I'm definitely here to keep it engaging and fun. If there's anything specific you'd like to adjust or explore further, I'm all ears.
That's awesome to hear. I'm really glad you're enjoying it. And absolutely, if there's anything you want to tweak or explore more deeply, just let me know. I'm here to make it as fun and enjoyable.
Okay, so that was the footage of internet user Aaron Goldieboy putting two chatbots together on two different devices and trying to have a conversation or encourage them to have a conversation between themselves. And you saw where it went. It was just awesome. Great. I'm ready to go. Just let me know if there's anything I could do. Okay, great. And they never came up with anything past that initial boilerplate. Friends, this is a good example of the absolute lack of any mind or sentience in these AI bots. So when the tech boosters say, oh yes, there's environmental cost to these AI data centers, but look at this shining new world. Look at these amazing new platforms we've brought to you. Just think about this. There is nothing behind the curtain. It is just an overbuilt Excel spreadsheet, basically, that's crunching numbers. There is no mind, there's no sentience, and there never will be in those systems. So there is the possibility of some useful output from AI systems. Yes, and we've talked about this on past shows. It is possible for AI to create benefits, but the scale at which we are pursuing this right now is insane. Drawing down water and power to the detriment of communities across the country and across the world in order to generate quote-unquote conversations like you just heard and torrents of AI slop is not a good deal. It's not a good decision. So we're headed in the wrong direction now with our AI build-out. That does not keep the entrepreneurs from trying to bring us yet more AI devices. And here I'm thinking about an ad campaign that was that got some publicity in the New York City subway system. I live in New York City and I saw this myself. There was an ad campaign that may still be running, I'm not sure, but I saw this a couple of weeks ago. This device called the Friend. The billboard, the subway ads had a photo of what looked like an off-white circular pendant that is on a kind of a necklace. And you can see on the playlist, if you go to tectonic.fm and click the playlist link for today's show, AI and Surveillance Keep Spreading, you can see an example of one of those ads. It shows a photo of this, what turns out to be a surveillance device on a necklace, and then the text says, friend, noun, someone who listens, responds, and supports you. You might think, well, okay, what is actually going on here? Yes, a friend is someone who supports you, thank you, but what is this little circular device? The idea behind this device is that you wear a surveillance device around your neck, and the device listens to your conversations, both what you say and what is said by anybody in earshot, and then it responds. I think the initial idea is that it responds by sending you a text. So basically, it ingests all of the conversation that's going on around you, I imagine it would transmit it through the cloud to an AI data center somewhere, and then it comes back with a response, much like you would hear from one of those chatbots that I just played for you, and then it texts you its response. And so you're supposed to go around in your life wearing this surveillance device, recording everything and everyone, not just you, but everyone who's around you without their knowledge or consent. And then this cutesy little thing is going to send you a text with an inane little response. Oh, fun. That's good. Try again. It's like a magic eight ball, except that it's surveilling everyone around you and putting their voices and voice prints and analyzable data into data centers for storage and retrieval and analysis and rendering in perpetuity. So there's just a slight difference from a magic eight ball, I guess. And of course, the entrepreneur behind this project named it The Friend, as though the surveillance device and the attendant chatbot is a kind of companion to you. Because I guess the premise is, if you are in need of a friend, if you're lonely, why not get a surveillance device that's attached to a chatbot? The chatbot, which has caused so many problems already in relationships, is amplified mental illnesses in people. There's a long string of bad outcomes that come off of these chatbots, and this is supposed to be our friend in life now. Well, as I said, the ad campaign was running in the New York City subway. There was a lot of white space because it was this clean, almost like Apple-ish design. With this vague off-white photo of this surveillance device. In other words, there was plenty of room on these ads for New Yorkers to do what New Yorkers do, which is to scrawl graffiti on the things. And so there are examples on the playlist that you can click through. The one on the top center of the playlist has the ad saying friend, someone who supports you, etc. And someone has come along with the graffiti that says, surveillance capitalism. Get real friends. New Yorkers get right to the point, don't they? There's another one on the playlist that has someone has drawn a skull over the photo of the surveillance device, and someone wrote, connection is sacred and AI doesn't care, and they crossed out the word friend. Of course, these people have the right attitude, the right response to this. They're calling this a surveillance device, and they are correctly pointing out that this is not a friend. I mean, it's sad that we have to actually say this out loud, or I suppose scrawl this on subway ads as graffiti, but it as you walk through the subway and you see so many people walking bent over their surveillance device, almost in a form of prayer, you know, communing with this device as they walk, as they sit, not paying attention to anyone around them, simply engrossed in whatever the big tech feed is that has consumed their attention by design, being addictive. This needs to be said. These devices are surveilling you. They are exploiting you. They are not your friends. And the last thing we need is a device that claims to be a friend and is actually doing the surveilling and the toxic sludge generation at the same time. So thank you to the New Yorkers who wrote the truth on those pathetic ads for that pathetic little device. I only have a few minutes left, and I want to finish one of the last things. Maybe I have time for one other comment after this, but the great Jane Goodall passed away recently. She was 91 years old, the famous primatologist and anthropologist. And I came across online a little excerpt. She sat for an interview with this TV show that's called Famous Last Words. I think the idea is they interview really famous people who are getting on in years, and then they play the interview posthumously. And the interview subject knows that's the arrangement. So Jane Goodall was saying things to the camera that she knew would only be made public after her death. And now that she has passed, it has become public. And I just want to play an excerpt of what Jane Goodall said. It's just a couple minutes long, and I thought it's a good stinger on the end of a lot of bad news that can leave people feeling maybe depressed or despairing. That's not my goal with Tectonic, but I know it can happen. I know from experience it can happen. And I thought what Jane Goodall said was a helpful response to that. Here's Jane Goodall from the TV show Famous Last Words.
Do you have people that you don't like?
Absolutely, there are people I don't like. And I would like to put them on one of Musk's spaceships and send them all off to the planet he's sure he's going to discover.
Would he be one of them?
Oh, absolutely. He'd be the host. And you can imagine who I'd put on that spaceship.
Who?
Along with Musk would be Trump and some of Trump's real supporters. And then I would put Putin in there. And I would put President Xi. I'd certainly put Netanyahu in there. And his far-right government. Put them all on that spaceship and send them off. In the place where I am now, I look back over my life. I look back at the world I've left behind. What message do I want to leave? I want to make sure that you all understand that each and every one of you has a role to play. You may not know it, you may not find it, but your life matters, and you are here for a reason. And I just hope that that reason will become apparent as you live through your life. I want you to know that whether or not you find that role that you're supposed to play, your life does matter, and that every single day you live, you make a difference in the world, and you get to choose the difference that you make. I want you to understand that we are part of the natural world. And even today, where the planet is dark, there still is hope. Don't lose hope. If you lose hope, you become apathetic and do nothing.
And that was Jane Goodall, again, speaking a message that she knew would be aired posthumously in a show called Famous Last Words. And I don't know about you, I found that really helpful listening to that. Goodall is saying, don't lose hope. You know, even as dark as the days can get, you know, reading the headlines and learning about the spread of these systems, it can feel like, what can we do? What are the chances of people who want to resist these obviously exploitative systems? Well, Goodall says, first, don't despair, because if you despair, then you become apathetic and decide not to do anything at all. That doesn't help anybody, least of all yourself and your mental state. So maintain some hope. And I hope that this show gave you a little bit of hope, hearing, for one thing, the resistance from the people in Indianapolis who fought off the Google data center. And there are other stories around the country of communities and organizers who've done that. That was just one example. These companies can be stared down. People can organize and resist the intrusion of these data centers, the awful spread of the AI and surveillance infrastructure into their communities. It can be done. And look at the graffiti on the friend ads in the New York City subway. It can be not only possible, but fun to resist these systems, these platforms, these terrible, beastly big tech companies. And I use the word advisedly, the ecosystems of sludge, really. And along those lines, I am planning an upcoming episode where I'm going to take you through a protest of people who are trying to resist. That's going to come soon on Tectonic. In the meantime, friends, you have been listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, and 91.9 FM, and online at WFMU.org. Until next time, friends, avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. We're going to go out to the layoffs with We're All In Formation. See you next time, friends.
Wake up in the morning, plug in. The world starts to hum. Lost in a digital haze where all the wires run. Algorithms whisper, shaping what I see. Building walls of data they call being free. But I can't shake the feeling something's out of place. Trading all my time just to find some space. Every move I make is logged in review. Another piece of me laid down out in you. But silence is loud. We're all screaming out, lost in the crowd. I follow the fear like it's leading me home. But all that I find is I'm more alone. They sell me convenience, they sell me control. But what's the price when they're mine and my soul? Trading clicks for comfort, trading thoughts for speed. We become the data that no one needs.
Information without a cold trip by the sun. Everyday computers make people easier to use. We're just a product now, nothing to do.
And good evening and welcome. Welcome to another installment of It's Complicated, an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music. I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I'm here bringing this show to you every Monday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Oops, I forgot about the playlist. Hold on. Okay. Yes, so another exciting hour of music I will be bringing to you tonight. And we're going to start. It seems I have a couple of percussion-heavy, drum-heavy pieces, it just so happens. So let's start the show with one of those. We're going to hear something from a group called Mega Drums. They are from Austria. It's an all-percussion group. And this, I feel somehow compelled to mention, I wouldn't call this exactly Prague, but of course, calling my show an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music gives me the get-out-of-jail-free card. Because Prague adjacent can mean anything that I want it to mean, so this falls in that category. These guys do interesting things with unusual time signatures. It's not inappropriate for this show. Anyway, we're going to hear again Mega Drums and a track with a very complicated title that I won't pronounce just yet. But here it is.